On today with Good Word with Goodwill, we talk Dame's return to Portland. Can Bradley Beal raise the ceiling for the Los Angeles Clippers? We're going to talk about LeBron and all of his drama. And then is Mike Brown the guy for the New York Knicks to take them to a championship? All this and more on Goodwill. Welcome to the Good Word. I'm Dan Titus, filling in for Vinny Goodwill, who's on a much-deserved vacation right now. Before we get to business, though, a couple bits of information just want to run through with you guys. If you haven't already, make sure you check out Good Word with Goodwill on YouTube, and make sure you leave a rating and subscribe wherever you get your audio podcasts. So today, I'm really excited because I get to talk to another Dan. This guy's been on the Yahoo roster for a long time. We've written together, but never actually had a formal conversation. I know he is now a lobster roll connoisseur, and he loves the New York Knicks. So I'm really excited to talk to Dan Devine. Dan, welcome to the show, man.
Oh, man, dude, it's good to talk to you. It's good to see you and be in this space with you. Vinny ducking me, clearly, the time we... The time we spent together at the finals, he was not enjoying it. He was like, I'm done with this dude. I got to get out. But it affords us the opportunity to do this together. So I'm excited to join up. And also, like, this time, this deep into July, rarely do you have, like, some actual news to discuss. So, right. Like, I'm kind of there. That's actually some stuff for us to chew on. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, this Summer League is obviously still going on in the background, and there's been a lot of conversation about what is LeBron going to do. But we actually got, I think, a really good story to talk about, and that's Damian Lillard just inked a new deal with the Portland Trail Blazers, the team that has essentially supported him since he came into the league. He has a very devoted fan base. Just a really good story. So just recently came out yesterday, Shams Charania announced that he's going to be signing a 3-year, $42 million deal that is at the non-taxpayer mid-level exception. I believe that was the most money that Portland could offer for that at $14 million per year. Just a great situation, in my opinion, from just a basketball storytelling standpoint, right? Like, who doesn't like a reunion of this magnitude? And it kind of felt like the Dame moving to Milwaukee never really hit the way it was supposed to. Maybe he was uncomfortable. We just learned that his family was in Portland the whole time that he was in Milwaukee. So now that he gets to go back, be with his family, rehab a very serious Achilles injury, this seems like the best of both worlds. What do you think?
Yeah, when I first heard about it, when you get to this time of the calendar, you're like, all right, is that like Sharns Narnia, or is that like for real? Is it right, you gotta make sure it's like the right notification, the right person, it's a real thing. And then what, you know, you confirm that, you see, like, you know, Chris Haynes reporting and it's coming from, you know, Bill Oram in the at the Oregonian, like, oh, this is for real. It felt like kind of take two, everybody, like a reset button. It got hit. Like, I don't know that anybody the first time around really wanted that relationship to end. Like, Damian Lillard had gotten to a point where the way the roster had been managed and the way that the movement of the Trailblazers organization was going younger. You know, we got Scoot Henderson in the door. There was Shaedon Sharpe. They were sort of not really sure what all is coming next. If Damian Lillard was going to make a decision, like, you know, Kevin Garnett before him or so many other players, where it's like, I got to get to a place where I can try to continue to compete for championships, it made sense to try to find that out off ramp at that point after 11 years in Portland. But I don't think he was excited about it. And I certainly don't think the Blazers were excited about it. The fan base, I know for a fact, was not excited about it. It felt like everybody kind of made their peace with, all right, he gets to go to Milwaukee. He's going to pair with Giannis. There's going to be an opportunity. But, like, it never felt right.
No.
And our host of this show, the vacationing Vincent Goodwill, had talked to Dame in February 2024, and Dame was pretty clear about that. You know, like, sorry, I'm going to find the quote here. He said, like, I love playing in Portland, living in Portland, loved the organization, had a great run. I just wanted a chance to win a championship. So that's a lot to let go of. It's probably the hardest transition in my life, all things considered. And that's, as you mentioned, he had been, you know, his children, his family was all out there in Portland. They'd all been sort of circulated around there. Then he leaves. He was going through, at that point, a separation, later a divorce. Like,
right.
That's a lot of tumult in somebody's personal life, let alone I'm going to somebody else's team, another all-time great guy's team, and I got to kind of get in where I fit in. There was the, injury, movement around, like, is Chris Middleton going to be here? Is this guy going to be here? Is that guy going to be here? How do we all sort of coalesce together? How do we find a rhythm? Giannis doesn't wants to play the pick and roll a certain way. I want to play the pick and roll a certain way. Does it make the most sense for me to be running pick and roll with Brooke Lopez? And then what is Giannis? Like, there was all these sort of on-court questions, off-court questions, and it never really coalesced. Now, everything kind of gets to kind of chill out and start over. There are reasonable questions about what this is an on-court product for the Blazers, but they don't have to answer those right now because Dame's not going to be around next year, right? He'll be around the team. He'll be rehabbing, but they get the opportunity to figure out what does life look like with Jrue Holiday next to Scoot Henderson, next to Shaedon Sharpe? How do those guys play next to Denny Avdija, next to Tumani Kamara? Our young bigs, we've got Donovan Kling and we've got Young Hansen that we just drafted that is tearing up summer league. Also, Jeremy Grant is still here making
somehow
money.
Still there.
Somehow still there on that on the deal. And I'll never forget that. It was like Dame is looking to see how the Blazers are going to handle this offseason. The Blazers have given Jeremy Grant a 5-year, $100-something million contract. Damian Lillard would like to leave the Portland Trail Blazers. Like, I'm sure it wasn't A to B to C, but it felt that way.
It did.
It felt that way. So anyway, all that to say, like, they got a year to figure out kind of what comes next. Build on that defensive uptick they had the second half of last season where they were an above 500 team second half. Let Dame get rehabbed and then figure out who's on the team, what the future kind of looks like in a year from there. It feels like a refresh opportunity for all parties involved. And like the last thing I'll say about, because I know I've been yammering, is that I get the organization's job is to try to win a championship. The player's job is to try to win a championship. But there's more stuff that matters than that. Right. And I think we lose sight of that. We sometimes lose sight of the unique relationships that sometimes individual players have with an organization, with a team, with a fan base. The idea that being an icon and a legend in one place can overwhelm some other things. So the idea that we're not going to see Dame in like a third, fourth, fifth jersey, right?
Right.
We're seeing him back in the one that we came to know him and love him in, the one that has meant so much, so many iconic moments in his career. That's rad.
No, Dan, you brought up a great point because I think sometimes it's deeper than basketball, right? Like for him to have the opportunity to choose his family and his what was comfortable for him in a pretty much a gap year where he's going to have to spend a lot of his time rehabbing to get back to that form that we once saw or hoped for. It's just really interesting how he just didn't choose the ring culture, right? Because there were multiple suitors that were willing to pay that non-taxpayer mid-level exemption. And he was like, you know what? I'm just going to have this reunion because this makes sense to me at this point in my career. I'm joining a Portland team that, by all accounts, looks like it's an ascending team, right? You mentioned their draft picks in Young Hansen, also the development of Shaedon Sharpe, Scoot Henderson. I want to go back to that for a second, but Denny Avdija looks amazing. And they were a top five defensive rated team after the All-Star break. So it's just, there's pieces here that I think could really have this team become more of a contender than a pretender. And if you put in Damian Lillard into that equation, assuming that he's, you know, 75-80% of what he was, that could be a very good opportunity. So I want to go to the on-court side of things. Like, do you think this is an indictment of potentially Scoot Henderson's development or lack thereof? Because you know you have Jrue Holiday, now Damian Lillard's there. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's tough to call it an indictment. Like, Scoot Henderson is 21 years old still, right? Yeah. Like, he came in out of the G League and was like, it was raw to start with. And the rookie guards, young guards usually aren't good. Like at the risk of painting too broad a brush. Like, and especially in an environment where there's really not a whole lot of structure around it and where everything is a little bit up for grabs. And it seemed like over the course of the second half of last season, the lights started to come on a little bit for him.
Yeah.
And I think that informed the decision to move off of Anfernee Simons this season because you need to see, I think I believe Scoot becomes extension eligible after the season. I think that Shaedon Sharpe is right now. So there's a certain point where like, you got to figure out what you got. And there is, it also I think informs the opportunity to bring in Jrue Holiday and say, you know, that is like a rock solid veteran, a multiple time champion, a culture setter, somebody who,
yeah,
floor raiser and a mentor type figure, somebody who is not going to shirk the responsibility that comes along with helping pull these guys' coats and bring them along. And so the fact that Dame, you have that gap year, like you don't have to worry about is Dame going to get in the way of their development next year, because he's not going to play, right? Right. Like the minutes and the opportunities and the shots and the touches and the usage and all that, that's still going to be there for those guys to be able to sink or swim on their own merits to a greater degree, because there is more talent around them. There is more structure around them. We're not wondering if, like, are we about to be playing for our next head coach because Chauncey Billups just got the extension. Yeah. We're not wondering, we got to look over our shoulder because there might be a new front office in here. Joe Cronin just got the extension. And obviously there is enough confidence in what he has been able to put together to where, like, you're getting to continue to write checks even as the sale of the team is you know, in the offing, where they're looking at potential, you know, new owners for the team. Like, you're still writing checks and spending money. So you're able to buy out DeAndre Ayton and spend the owner's money even as they're thinking about selling. So, like, Joe Cronin's got the ability to continue to make decisions. Chauncey Billups has the faith of the management structure there. You know what things are. So I think, obviously, if Scoot Henderson had hit the ground sprinting and was averaging, you know, looking like Dame looked 10, 15 years ago, right? Then, you know, maybe the way that things operate would be looking a little bit different. But you now have some more stability, some more structure. He's got a couple of years under his belt. Again, still just 21 years old, younger than some of the prospects that came in this draft. So you have the opportunity to say, you got a runway now. You've got a structure around you. We know what kind of team we want to be. We're going to be defense first. And then you got to be able to show where you can get to with your shot, where you can get to with your finishing around the rim and your facilitation and the ball screens. Like, that growth, if that shows, then there's going to be an opportunity, I think, for the keys to be in his hands full time. And he'll get to spend the whole year kind of soaking up game from both Drew and Dame. Seems like a pretty decent opportunity for him.
Yeah, do you think that there's more to this beyond just the reunion of Damian Lillard, but you mentioned the sale of the team. Paul Allen's estate is going to be selling this franchise right now. Damian Lillard was top 10 or top 15 in jersey sales over, I think, 8 of the last 10 seasons. So if you're talking about ticket revenue, you're selling your team, makes sense to bring a star back in the building. Not only you draft Young Hanson, and you're expanding your global reach and market by him as it being another asset. So I just think business-wise, optically, it makes a lot of sense, the moves that they're making. But then also from a team construction and building standpoint, you mentioned them buying out DeAndre Ayton. Made a lot of sense when you have Donovan Kling in there. And then also just a guy that just didn't really seem to fit culturally. There's reports of the laziness, among other things. Now you can kind of rebrand and reset around this young team with Drew Holiday as your leader, you know, your vet leader in the room, and then build off the young prospects that are seemingly growing at a very high pace, especially Tumani Kamara. I mean, that guy defensively is amazing, but yeah.
Yeah, I think, well, the public service journalism component of this, right? The idea of, like, we are making a move aimed at, in part, yeah, sales, ticket sales, jersey sales, whatever. Yeah. But also just, like, I don't know, for lack of a better term, like a vibes injection. Like, the idea of, like, we know that this is, like, one of the most beloved players in the history of our franchise.
For sure.
One thing I really enjoyed, like, just, like, talking about this on social media last night. it'll be, find his name, X Tracker X on Blue Sky responded to me and said, living in Portland, a man pushing his child in a stroller shouted the Dame news to everyone in the park. So the idea is like walking through a public park and screaming out, like, the town crier, Dame is back, Dame is back. I don't know if everybody's going to have that reaction, but he's the kind of guy, and that's the kind of place where that kind of reaction can happen. So I think the idea of we know it's been a couple of years in the wilderness as we cycle off of the contracts that came in as a result of this and try to figure out which pieces of after the trades and from our draft classes and from whatever are going to be part of our next competitive iteration, all that stuff.
Sure.
We feel like we're pointed in the right direction now, and we've got the opportunity to another reason for enthusiasm and excitement. And I think it is reasonable to wonder if in a year's time, like, this is going to be too many cooks in the kitchen, if it's going to be an impediment to whatever young players you want to put the keys in the hands of more. Yeah. But, like, for right now, they've lost nothing from what appears to be, again, as you mentioned, a fairly competitive on-court product in the coming year. Like, this does not at all meaningfully impact or change or detract from the talent base that they were looked to be bringing into the season 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And it gives everybody a reason to be excited. And it gives you the possibility that in a year's time, even if Damian Lillard isn't at whatever, 36 years old, coming off of an Achilles with all the mileage that's on him, even if he's not back to being an all-NBA caliber player, that would be an awfully big ask. if what he is one of the smartest facilitators in the ball screen game that there is in the league and an elite shooter, you could find places for that guy, especially on a $14 million mid-level contract, right? That guy can contribute around other talent as a third guard, as a second start, whatever. You got some moves to make there, some opportunity for growth on the offensive end of the floor. And you've maybe got some defensive infrastructure around him to insulate him. So right. It feels to me like a no downside kind of move for the Blazers, with the possibility of, like, I don't know, emotional, psychic benefits. Like, I know that stuff's sort of soft and squishy. It's a little bit trickier to put into metrics, but
yeah.
It's also not nothing, I don't think. And especially for a team that's in Portland's position where they're not competing, they're also not tanking. You need reasons to feel good about where you are. And I think this is another one.
Yeah, you can't discount the qualitative benefits of a move like this. Last point to it. What are your thoughts on the no trade clause that he also earned himself in the midst of this? Just being how much Bradley Beal's caused so much controversy in this landscape. We'll talk about him in a minute. But I just thought it was an interesting wrinkle to this, because I feel like more so this is Damian Lillard saying, hey, just don't trade me again. I'll be happily retired as a Portland Trailblazer. Because he's like, I was trying to debate, like, is he the best Blazer of all time? And I think it's only really him and Clyde Drexler at this point. He could pass, like, if he comes back healthy, he could pass most of Clyde Drexler's records, except maybe 2-point field goals made. But, you know, I think this is setting up for him to retire a Blazer, which I think would be the bow on top to really complete this storied career.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know, it's like Bill Walton, maybe, in terms of just like won a championship there, but that was a short time, a long time ago. Like, record books, no question about it. You know, Dame is going to, if he's not the greatest Blazer ever, he's on the very short list of it. So, you know, there's going to be ought to be a Dame statue outside of the Moda Center or whatever the new arena winds up being whenever it gets erected. But I think the no trade clause is funny because the structure or the conditions that allow it to happen are worth breaking out here.
Yeah.
In order, the letter of the law on the CBA is, in order to qualify for a full no trade clause, you have to have at least 8 years of service time. Dame has, you know, more than a decade in the league, and 4 years of service time with the same team, which Dame obviously has with the Blazers. They just weren't the last four. And so you don't usually see that, right? Like, yeah, I do have four straight with this team from a while ago, from 3 years ago. And that created the conditions where you could write it into the contract. And so I like, it's weird and it's rare, as you mentioned, but the Bradley Beal one caused no shortage of consternation and agita in Washington and then in the Valley over the last few years. Yeah. But I think from Dame's perspective and Dame's management's perspective, the last time he wound up in a situation with the Blazers, I mean, all the reporting was, and from Vinny and from a lot of other plugged in folks all over the map, he wanted to be in Miami, right? That was where he wanted to go. He did not have a no trade clause or the opportunity to direct where exactly he wound up. And he wound up in Milwaukee. And the last 2 years, it sounds like we're not an awful lot of fun for Damian Lillard. So you put yourself in position coming off this injury, coming off, you know, as you enter your mid 30s and you're in a lot of uncertainty. And so, you know, and there's a lot of kind of the ground shaking around you a little bit if you're Damian Lillard. This is a stabilizing agent. Yes, I'm now a $14 million contract. That's a mid-sized deal that would be awful easy to put into an awful lot of trades.
Mm-hmm.
But I want that. I want to be home and I want to be with my people. I want to be where, you know, I want to be with my family. So if this allows him a measure of control that he did not previously have, and I think it represents a lesson learned from last time. If you've got the opportunity to ask for it, ask for it. And I mean, they gave it. The fact that the Blazers gave it to him, I think, is an indication of the franchise being like, bygones be bygones, water under the bridge. We have no interest in doing this again. We want you to be here and to leave when you are ready as the greatest player in our franchise's history. And, you know, pretty rare are the opportunities to get a second chance for something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And someone else that's getting a second chance, or maybe it's a third chance, Bradley Beal decided to sign with the Los Angeles Clippers. And I think that was more talked about as the most likely destination, especially after Norman Powell was traded to the Miami Heat. There was a void there that needed to be filled. My question to you, Dan, is can Bradley Beal repair his image, I guess, or his standing in the league? Because it's kind of confusing, because I think the reason he wanted to leave Phoenix was because he didn't like his role. You know, at one point he was reduced to a bench role. He was the third wheel And I'm pretty sure when he goes to the Clippers, he's going to have a pretty similar role. He can still play on ball. He's still going to soak up some usage, but it's still not going to be to the tune of James Harden and Kawhi Leonard if they're both healthy. So what do you see Bradley Beal at this phase of his career kind of rebuilding this image? Like, how do you feel he's going to impact the Clippers in totality? Or is this going to be more of the same we've seen from Beal at every destination he's been in the last couple of tours?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because last year was, I think it was 22% usage. It was the lowest usage rate of his career. And I don't think that's going to go up in the Clippers ecosystem, given the number of capable creators and finishers around there. Like I think that's bears watching. It's also though interesting, like it feels like everyone thinks that Bradley Beal sucks now.
Right.
And
like, he's been quietly like very efficient over the last few seasons. Yeah, like 50, 40, 90.
Yeah, 2 years in Phoenix. And it's 17.6 points per game, about four assists, four rebounds on 50, 40, 81 shooting. Like,
yeah, that's,
I mean, it ain't bad work if you can get it. I think the issue is you need, in order to rehabilitate your image, it's not enough to just produce. And it's not enough to just produce in the regular season. I think in order for people to return to viewing Bradley Beal as like a star, which is unfortunate, the unfortunate thing for him is not his fault. He got paid as much money as he could possibly be paid and got a no trade clause because the Wizards were like, we don't know what the future looks like without you. And then as it turned out, the future looked grim without him, but they're at least now moving toward constructing something. Through no fault of his own, he said, yes, please pay me as much money as possible and give me the control over what happens in my career. And then people were like, oh, now you're a bum. And so now he's going to make $5 million a year. And if he does what he's done the last 2 years for $5 million a year, he's going to be considered the greatest contract in the history of the league, right? So, but in order for his rehabilitation to happen, in terms of his reputation around among fandom, he's got to do something he hasn't done since 2017, which is be on a team that wins a playoff series. I think like if Bradley Beal goes into the first round of the playoffs and he either is like, eh, and the Clippers lose again, I think we just wind up going like, right, Bradley Beal is not somebody who is a meaningful player when it comes to impacting winning on the highest stages of the sport, which is a really dramatic shift from what it looked like early in Bradley Beal's career. Like, I'm old enough to remember those early Wizards teams with him and John Wall, where they were ripping and running against the Bulls. And, you know, if not for a broken hand, they might have beaten the Hawks. And, like, these teams were on the upswing in large part because Beal looked like a dog in those series. A guy who you could say he's going to guard and he's going to be a three-level scoring problem for whatever defense you throw out there. And, like, the glass half full look is he hasn't played alongside a table setting point guard like John Wall was then since John Wall, and he's got James Harden now. And James Harden reportedly, I think Brian Windhorst had it at ESPN, like Harden was really adamant about the recruiting of Bradley Beal to get him in the door. I mean, one of the most frequent assist combinations in the entire NBA last season was Harden to Norm Powell. I think he knows how good it can be to have a, you know, shooter with a sweet stroke coming off pin downs, coming off screen, someone that you can set up to be able to come around those curls, get downhill, get to the rim, which Beal can still do at a really high level and finish at the cup at a really high level. So it's going to be about Ken, whether it's alongside Harden or playing in the second units with like Bogdan Bogdanovic or playing off of Kawhi, whatever, he's going to have to get in where he fits in on the offensive end. And it's not going to be at the top of the pecking order. But if he's able to produce with the kind of efficiency and the kind of reduced role that, you know, if he replicates roughly what Powell did last year, I mean, Powell was a near all-star on a 50-win team.
He was, yeah.
If Brad Beal's that, I think everybody's awfully happy with the way this worked out. And then, like, as always is the case with the Clippers, it's wait and see until April, because I think they have not yet earned the benefit of the doubt when you get to that point. But they've done whatever they can this postseason, or this offseason rather, to put themselves in position to at least make another deep run.
Yeah, the combination for me with Beal, it's not whether he performs in the playoff setting. I just need him to be healthy. And it's the same issue with every Clippers player. You know, we don't know what Kawhi Leonard is really, how many games he's going to play. Like, he looked amazing when he came back after the All-Star break. And maybe that's going to be the formula going forward. And if that's the case, getting Bradley Beal in there is a really good floor raising opportunity if he can stay healthy. Like, he hasn't managed to play 60 games once, I think, in the last four seasons. It's always just been the Achilles heel of him is that he just can't stay on the court. So, but I love what the Clippers did in the offseason. They acquired John Collins. They got Brook Lopez. Now they brought in Bradley Beal for $5 million a year. Do you think that they're the third best team in the West? How high, what ceiling do you give them right now?
I feel like if you're watching on YouTube, you saw my face instantly scrunch up at the notion of third.
You don't put them over Denver yet.
No, I mean, you mean a Denver team that just beat them in the first round of the playoffs and then got better? Yeah, no, I don't see that. Now, granted, I mean, the Clips were what, like an Aaron Gordon buzzer beater away from being up in that series. So like, you know, it all turns on a trifle, right? It always has. But I look at the nature of the Western Conference at this point. Like, obviously, everybody's playing for second behind Oklahoma City right now. Yeah, that's, you know, you're the champs and you earned that respect.
Yep.
Are you taking them over the Rockets with KD?
No.
You taking them over the Nuggets after they've I guess if Jonas Valanciunas actually remains in America, that's an important one. But like, you bring in Cam Johnson, you bring in Tim Hardaway Jr., you've added shooting and movement and playmaking, Bruce Brown back, you know, like more depth for a team that was like four dudes deep by the end of the playoffs last year, and still has the best player on the planet. Do you feel like they're definitely better than the Timberwolves that has gone to two straight Western Conference Finals? That last time Bradley Beal was in the playoffs, Anthony Edwards summarily exited him from the playoffs, ushered him out stage left with no mercy. So I mean, all that to say, like, as is always the case with the Clippers, and it's why, like, you know, my friend Michael Pina from The Ringer, every year he's Charlie Brown with the football with the Clippers, and the Clippers are just Lucy waiting to yank it away from him. But if you can tell me that they're going to get to mid-April and all these dudes are healthy, then, I mean, what's not to like about a team that can go 10 deep with, like, legitimate, multi-talented, versatile, deep players that can play two bigs, that can play no bigs, that can play four guards, that can have multiple guys handle and create, that can, you know, have Bradley Beal be your third option, that can, you know, play Nick Batum as a stretch, switch everything five. Like, there's all these different ways they can play. But it requires you to be like, I believe that Kawhi Leonard's going to be ready to go in April, May, and June. It requires me to believe that James Harden's going to be there in the last 5 minutes of a close game. It requires me to believe that Bradley Beal's going to be there in the last 5 minutes of a close game. It requires me to believe that I think what they will wind up being probably the oldest roster adjusted for, you know, weighted by age in the NBA. So like, minutes adjusted, right? That's what I mean. Waited for minutes that they're expected to be played in the NBA. Like, it's asking a lot. And so I'm not going to judge and say forget them. But to me, they are like in that cluster of, I think it's OKC, I think it's Houston, I think it's Denver, and then I kind of think it's everybody else. Like, they're going to need to show and prove that they deserve to be up above, not just, you know, those teams that we talked about, but also like the Lakers and the Warriors, right? Like, they're maybe even like a shot out of a Cannon Spurs team. I don't know. Like, there's a thick middle class, I think, between, you know, whatever, 3-8, 3-9.
Right.
And I think the Clippers have done what they can to put themselves in position to rise to the top of that tier. But like, I don't know, man. Maybe I'm a hater, but maybe I'm just being prudent. I kind of need to see it to believe it.
I don't think you're wrong in that assessment, because we just don't know that we can trust the Clippers ever. But I think it's more of a testament to what everyone else has been doing to kind of keep pace with the Thunder here. And I think that there's been a lot of good movement in the Western Conference. And I think if you're looking at everything, I think there's tiers, right? You have Oklahoma City, then you have Houston, probably, I would say, in their close own tier. And then that 3-8, we have no idea what that's going to really look like. And who knows, maybe even the Pelicans, if they have as much confidence as Joe Dumars does, they'll be a playoff contender, or else they're going to lose their 2026 unprotected Bucks or Suns pick.
Well, you know what? Here I am. I'm making faces. I'm making sounds. It's the middle of July.
I don't believe it at all. For the record, no, I don't believe it at all. There could be some surprises here that
hope springs eternal
up
at this time of year. Zion Williamson, 75 games, All NBA first team. Lock it in. They're winning 48, and they're getting up there. I love it. Lock it in. You got DeJounte Murray coming back off the Achilles midseason. He's going to be the best trade deadline acquisition anybody can make. Yeah. I love it. Let's do it.
Coming back after the break, we're going to take a pause for a moment, pay some bills, and we'll be right back to talk about LeBron and the Lakers and, you know, the drama that always is going to come with it. All right, unsurprisingly, we saw LeBron make a couple of appearances at Summer League. I did not expect that. Maybe he was trying to have conversations with Rob Pelinka, whoever the case may be. A report came out from Anthony Irwin, a senior insider at the Lakers, saying that LeBron has become increasingly frustrated and unhappy with the direction of the team since the Russell Westbrook trade. Does this come as a surprise to you, Dan, or is this more of just, I don't know, LeBron needs to be in the headlines and staying relevant, even though he's signed his player option for $52 million and he will be a member of the Los Angeles Lakers. And it's increasingly hard to trade a guy and match salary in this current CBA. So is this just noise? What are your take on it?
Yeah. Well, first off, you forgot the main reason he was at Summer League. His son was playing, right? Like, you got to go watch Bronny.
Of course. He was there last year, too.
And listen, Bronny has given him reason to be excited about watching him play this summer.
He's looking very good.
It is funny that when you zoom out from all of it, the headline is more like, report, man who opted into contract will stay with team that is paying him. Like, right. It is a little bit wild that that's where we've arrived at here, but it is the truth. It's noise, and it's noise for noise's sake. It's noise because it's the middle of July. It's noise because folks like us need something to talk about. But it's also, there is some signal in the noise insofar as I think it is a real understandable point of contention, of friction or whatever, that for the first time in LeBron James's life, he is not the North Star that an organization is pointed toward. Like, and this was something like, everybody noted, when we were doing all our writing after the Luka trade, I wrote it too, like one of the losers of that transaction was the idea that LeBron James was going to be the prime mover in Los Angeles moving forward. And that is not a hot take. That's one dude's 14 years younger than the other dude. And like, that's the way it works. And so you were absolutely right to point to the notion that it is difficult to trade a $52 million contract. If LeBron James wanted to be anywhere else, he could have opted out. He didn't want to opt out because, you know, like we're talking about, you know, Dame gets waived and stretched and he's going to sign for $14 million. Bradley Beal gets waived and stretched and he's signing for $5 million. LeBron James wasn't going to go someplace else and sign for, you know, the biannual exception. LeBron James is going to get the top possible dollar wherever it was. And then there wasn't a like max team out there for him unless he wanted to go to Brooklyn, and he don't want to go to Brooklyn. So this was always the way it was going to play out. The questions moving forward are all about, what does this mean like next on the court next year? What does this mean when we get to next summer and we revisit this whole question about where does LeBron want to be for the balance of his career? Does he decide that he's done? Does he decide that he wants to play 2-3 more years? At what price point? Because I would be surprised, given the saber rattling about, we don't want to extend our cap. The Lakers want to maintain their cap flexibility for 26-27 moving forward. They don't want more long-term money after they get the Luka extension figured out. They want to be able to pivot to whatever, you know, put the next co-star around Luka for what's going to be the next handful of years. I would be surprised if they wanted to go a multi-year max for LeBron at that point, considering they already don't want to do that. And he's going to be 41 years old.
Very old.
So there's many things to figure out, but LeBron is going to stay with the Lakers where he's like built his life for the last half decade or more. Like 8 years now? Jeez, it's been forever. Crazy. But like he's going to stay there to make as much money as he can possibly make right now, because he opted in and said that's what he wanted to do, doesn't seem like a super shock. And then the rest of it is kind of all noise.
Yeah. Now that the Lakers have new ownership, I'm curious to see where Rob Pelinka's place in this standing is. Like maybe he's bulletproof for a while because he acquired...
No, he traded for Luka. Like, where's he going?
Cachet off of that, right? You know what I mean? At least you did that. So yeah, I'm curious to see where this goes. I don't think this is going to end up being a midseason trade or anything like that. I think LeBron's going to play out the final year and then we'll see what's next. Maybe it's retirement. Maybe it's going somewhere else, but at least at the forefront of it, LeBron staying relevant in the media, and that's usually that's usually the case with LeBron, man. He always finds his way to be relevant. So right after the break, we're going to talk about the Knicks because I can't not have you on the pod and talk about the Knicks. So let's get to that. All right, so the Knicks decided to move on from Tom Thibodeau. I wasn't really a fan of it just because of what he's done for this franchise, sure, going to their first Eastern Conference Finals in a quarter century. They were on the cusp of winning, but they just can't seem to get over beating those Pacers. But what are your thoughts on the Mike Brown move? Because to me, it kind of seemed like a lateral. I think it came off to me as if Mike Brown, I listened to his press conference and I actually came away kind of encouraged. I was like, this guy's learned from every step of every place that he's been. And hopefully he can apply some of those learnings to this situation. This situation's a bit different. New York is a beast. and they're actually good right now. I think the one thing that got Tibbs in trouble is that he couldn't adapt. He adapted too late. He's trying to get people in the rotation in playoff time when you should have experimented that in the regular season. Having watched this team in summer league, I'm not super confident in their farm. It doesn't look like Tyler Kolek looks to me like he's like a backup point guard. Yeah. Kevin McCullough looked really good. Mohamed Diawara gave me some flashes that I was like, oh, okay, maybe this guy could be a guy in the future. The problem is this isn't going to be guys that you're going to be putting in your rotation next year. What they did do in the offseason was get Jordan Clarkson, a bucket off the bench. They got Gershon Yabusele to go in there. And I think you could possibly tweak the rotation, start Mitchell Robinson, bring Josh Hart off the bench. I think that there's more configuration lineup configurations that you can play with now that Mike Brown will be more willing to do than Tom Thibodeau. So how much pressure do you see is on Mike Brown right now? Do you think he's the right man for the job to potentially take the Knicks to the promised land? I want to see it. I'm a Philly guy, and I would love to see something good happen to Knicks fans at one point.
You're awfully kind to me for a Philly guy. I didn't realize that. But what I would say is Mike Brown is under pressure because the bar that we've set is if you make the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time in 25 years, you can still get fired, right? Like the bar at this point, and like this is like the Tom Thibodeau situation is emblematic of the state of affairs in the NBA at large, right? Like Michael Malone wins the championship, and 2 years later, he's out. You're because out. Yeah. Of, internecine fighting and non-alignment. And, Frank Vogel wins the title, and a year later, he's out. Darvin Ham makes the Western Conference Finals, and a year later, he's out. Like, the windows are so small and so short. It's open for such a short period of time, and it's getting narrower and shorter every year, it seems like, given the high cost of rosters and the challenges of paying into the luxury tax and into the repeater and with the aprons and the restrictions on roster management and all those sorts of things. So like, you got to get it when you got it. And I think the message of we're moving on from Tom Thibodeau is like, that's not a move that you make as an organization if you feel like you're where you are supposed to be. It's a move you make if you feel like you've got a championship roster that isn't being maximized. Mike Brown, I think, is an interesting kind of thread the needle choice because I think if you zoom out from his resume and what he was, defensive-minded culture coming out of his years as an assistant in San Antonio under Greg Popovich and in Indiana under Rick Carlisle and during those years with Cleveland where they were built obviously on LeBron, but like they were elite defensive teams. They're not elite offensive teams outside of LeBron. Right. And so then he goes and it's the skirt and the pivot. There's the brief period in LA where they make the playoffs and then he's gone after five games in his second season. He has the time on the Golden State bench where he was a defensive coordinator, but also heavily involved in the offense and a lot more motion, and then brings that motion to Sacramento. And so it's like the idea of this is somebody who is capable of being conversant in a number of different styles, can bring you a lot of the same, we do not compromise on our defensive principles, period, kind of, hard assery, for lack of a better term, of Tom Thibodeau. But has shown a willingness to be more flexible, to go deeper into his rotation, to say, I'm going to take the talent that I've got and I'm going to institute more ball movement, more player movement, more fluidity, more motion, and not just have it be station-to-station basketball where everybody's watching one guy cook.
Right.
The thing that I think will be fascinating to see, like, you look at the Knicks roster and like, yeah, there's playmakers. There's guys who can pass. There's guys who can are capable of facilitating.
They just haven't had the opportunity to do it. Because the ball's in Jalen's hands most of the time, right?
And you know what? It's a pretty good spot for it to be in is in Jalen Brunson's hands. But also, Karl Anthony Towns as a wonderful offensive player, but he's not structurally like Domantas Sabonis, right? Where like right. that is a – I mean, he can uh-huh. pass, but he can be a high post passer. He can be somebody making drop-down cuts. But also, like, I have a vision in my head of Towns, like, with his back to the basket and kind of like throwing hook shots over his head, passing to cutters and like passing it into four dudes and getting like booted out of bounds. So like he can be a little bit too like, check this out. And it's like, right. that's not what we need here. We need a handoff. Yeah, exactly. We need a handoff into the next motion. But yeah. I think the player that I think is going to be most fascinating to watch here, and it's kind of a cop out, is like, is Jalen Brunson more comfortable getting off it, right? Like
yeah.
Obviously the reason that everything works in Golden State the way it works is because, you know, all things are possible through Steph Curry. But sure. the reason that things operate the way they do, he gets off it, makes himself a screener, makes himself right. a threat off the ball, and that right. activates everybody else. We know Jalen Brunson can cook as an on-ball creator. We know he's somebody that if you run him through 40, 50 pick and rolls a game, you're going to get good stuff out of it. But we also know, and one thing that I remember, I was able to follow the Knicks. I was there covering the games here in New York, but then I was also on the road for the Eastern Conference Finals to watch them against the Pacers. And like in the beginnings of those games, Thibodeau would come out and call for sets that got Brunson off the ball early. He's coming off out of the corner, coming around handoffs. You're getting more motion early. And it was like, it felt almost like the idea was, let's start the game by having you moving and like not just giving you the ball with a high screen and the, you know, 1-4 right. flat or whatever, three of the space to the corners and then the high screen.
Go to work, yeah.
So he's got, we're going to find out if the Knicks' more stagnant approach was coaching oriented or star oriented. And I think that's going to be pretty interesting to find out, because we know that Mike Brown, given his druthers, wants to play more passing, more movement, faster into your sets, across half court earlier, get into your actions with, you know, more time on the shot clock, be able to go deeper and spread the floor, all those sorts of things. Yeah. Now we're going to find out if Jalen Brunson wants to play that way. And I think he's capable of it. I think guys like Josh Hart and Mikal Bridges, maybe a larger role for Mikal Bridges. Towns, if he's not sort of minimized as a spacer, all these sorts of, like, there's opportunities for a higher end offensive creation there, but it's got to come from the top down. And I think if Jalen Brunson shows that he's willing to buy into that, the sky could be the limit for the Knicks offense under Mike Brown.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see how they can adapt. I do think getting Jalen Brunson off ball more and just as a more of a facilitator, getting others involved. Because I think, I don't know, Bobby Marks was alluding to the fact that a deal's been done for Mikal Bridges, but this is a pretty important time for him.
Absolutely.
Extension eligible, 4 years, I think $150 million, something like that. It's going to be an interesting time to see if he's going to be ready to step up. Because I think many of the Knicks fans were expecting a different version of him, maybe the Brooklyn Nets version, maybe us with more defense and a little bit more offense. But, you know, five picks, that's a hell of an investment for a guy that really wasn't utilized at all and showed no aggression to get to the rim, get into the foul line. I think that that's what's going to take this team to the next level, along with, as you said, you know, playing more through Karl Anthony Towns and playing to his strengths. And maybe Mike Brown can unlock it. We will see. It is definitely going to be a tall order, considering the way he went out in Sacramento and the players not really actively supporting or wanting to hear his agenda, as that it seemed like it kind of wore on him. Kind of similar to what Tibbs does. He kind of wears on you a little bit. So,
but so that's the thing, right? Like, if these guys have a shelf life, and it's yeah. only a few years. Well, the Knicks only need it to be much longer than a few years, right? If you get like most of the positives of Tom Thibodeau and a little bit more flexibility and a little bit more offensive creativity, the gap between two games away from the finals and the finals ain't that big. It's only two games. I'm not an advanced analytics guy, but I know two games away. If they're able to get there, then like, you know, all is forgiven and all bets are off. So I think you're right to point to Bridges. He's going to wear the price tag of those picks like a millstone around his neck. But it's also worth remembering, like, they don't beat the Celtics without him, like, ripping the ball out of multiple dudes' hands late in the game. Like, he came to the party when they needed him to at different points. How he adjusts is going to be fascinating. Can Josh Hart be an impact player if he's moved out of the starting lineup? For whom would he be? There's a lot of questions to answer. But given the injuries in the East, like the team that has stood in their way over the last 2 years ain't going to be standing in their way next year in Indiana. Right. So like, this is an opportunity. The red carpet appears to be laid out. How the Knicks walk it ought to be fascinating to watch.
It will absolutely be fascinating. Dan, thank you for joining us today. Thanks to producer Dakota and the entire team that works behind the scenes to get this podcast out to you all. Vinny, I don't know if he'll be back next week. I think he'll still be vacationing. Oh, yeah, he's out. So maybe you'll see me again. Until then, everybody be safe.